Okay, we'll get started. Good morning. So last time we talked about 802.11 and Bluetooth, and this time we'll wrap up with 802.16 WiMAX, and then I will say a very few words about the exam. Before doing that, one other sort of piece of business admin. There were a number of requests for extensions on the assignment, and so based on those, I have extended the assignment due date till next Tuesday. Now, if I were you, I would get it done by Friday and enjoy your weekend. I think it's probably a better use of your time, but if you need a little extra time, it's there. Okay, I won't be considering further extension requests at this point unless, you know, if you're sick or, you know, whatever, then I'll consider those on an individual basis. One implication of having it due Tuesday, this is the bank holiday weekend, so if you're using the lab, you'll have to get your lab portion done by Friday anyway. Okay, so last time, again, we talked about various point-to-point, sort of local wireless technologies, and we looked at 802.11, which is the prevailing wireless local area network standard. And we saw there were a bunch of ways this could be set up. It could be set up for sort of an ad hoc fashion for the, you know, various devices to talk to each other, or sort of more likely that, there would be some access point and the devices would be communicating via an access point. Okay. And we said that sort of within the standard, that communication could either be centrally controlled or distributed, although in practice only the distributed contention-based access is actually implemented. And so then we had a look at what sort of contention-based access means for us. So how is it implemented? What implications does it have for quality of service? What are your alternatives for quality of service? And again, we noted that as a wireless system, security is an important issue, and there are various standards dealing with security as well. We then did a fairly whirlwind tour of Bluetooth, and Bluetooth is essentially a set of standards which were designed to address target application areas, so wire replacement, voice communication, etc. And so what they did was they provided sort of a basic protocol stack that would cover sort of various eventualities, various types of connectivity that are required by these different application areas. Okay. And so then within the application areas, they specify specific use cases, like providing a voice connectivity. And then for those use cases, you have profiles which indicate which portions of the protocols are relevant to that use case. Okay. The overall setup is it's a master-slave setup, so there's one master and a number of slaves, and the communication is controlled via the master. Okay, and then we had a look at the protocol architecture, the different layers, and sort of what functionality was provided at each of those layers. Okay, so today we're going to look at 802.16, the WiMAX standard, and okay, well, the references here are, there is a text which will give you sort of too much information. What the notes are primarily drawn from is a series of web articles called The Nuts and Bolts of WiMAX. So that's sort of a very small subset of what you find in the book. So if you're really enthusiastic about WiMAX, you can get the book. But the Nuts and Bolts gives you sort of an overview of sort of the main features of WiMAX, and that's sufficient primarily for these notes. WiMAX uses orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, so yet another multiplexing technique, which we'll again discuss here. And we don't, in the notes, give a huge amount of details, but if you want to know more or clarify a point from the notes, then the IEC tutorial is very good. And the second one, the complex to real, it digs into a lot about sort of the mathematical details of what's going on and the implementation of OFDM. So again, that would be more detail than I'd expect you to know, but if you're interested, it's there. So, what is WiMAX? Well, it's yet another technology for providing point-to-point connectivity. The 802.16 should give some clue to that. Again, it's in that family of local area networks, metropolitan area network standards, and so it at least initially started out defining a physical and a data link layer. Okay. Again, it was originally envisaged as a last mile connection. So that means a connection between, you know, your home residence and some a switching station or perhaps a cable station, something to replace the wires going into a collector point with wireless now. Okay. And its big plus was that it had very good bandwidth usage. Okay. Now, since that original development, people have examined it as a competitor to other cellular network technologies. And again, the big plus is that it does make very efficient use of bandwidth of the wireless spectrum. Obviously, what you need for mobility is sort of something on top of that point-to-point connectivity. So you can think that point-to-point connectivity gets you from a mobile station to a base station, but then you need all of the, if you want a cellular structure, you have to have all of the sort of back end as well. Okay. And so sort of primary additions needed, well, obviously all this back end, but then facilities for doing handover as well. Okay. And so the WiMAX 802.16e standard is certified as a 3G standard now, so it can be used to implement a 3G system. Okay. So, just in terms of evolution, again, it started out as a wireless last mile local loop system, so a wireless connection into end user homes, and it offered speeds of up to a few hundred kilobits per second, and sort of synced in with the current data offerings, which were giving you two voice lines and 128 kilobit per second data connection. And so, obviously, by today's standards, that's not interesting. Okay. So, the initial systems were line of sight. And initially, provided a one-way service with sort of into the home with the telephone line out of the home. Okay, and they had ranges of about 35 miles. Okay, the second generation provided line of sight technology, again introduced the orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, which again is going to make very efficient use of the bandwidth. The non-line of sight allows the system to be deployed indoors as well as outdoors. And you can potentially use a cellular structure to sort of have relays, etc. Okay, and this provided megabits per second over sort of a much shorter range. So again, to get coverage, you're going to have more base stations. Okay, and scalable orthogonal frequency division multiple access is built on top of OFDM and just gives a way to share the bandwidth between numerous users. Okay. So, currently, what's the picture? Well, WiMAX still offers higher data rates than sort of some of the competing systems. It would not offer as good data rates as a wireless LAN, again, mainly because of the sort of distances you're dealing with. Okay. It can offer a fairly symmetric uplink and downlink capacity, and is envisaged to support all IP. So this would be in line with sort of 4G technology. And that's one place that this potentially is going. And it allows for somewhat lower costs for not having to support all the telephony, the telephony services as well. Okay. It's not as sophisticated when it comes to mobility, when it comes to handover. And yeah, those are things that are sort of evolving and ongoing. Okay. A number of other 802 standards are being looked at as well. 802.20 provides for good handover facilities, and 802.22 sort of uses a different portion of the radio spectrum and it attempts to, again, get some mileage out of that. Okay, so like 802.11, WiMAX is an 802 standard. The 802.16 group was formed in 1998, and that was when the basic standard was developed. Okay. And so various sort of amendments have occurred as time went on, and again you can see that they're labeled by an A and potentially by the year in which they were adopted. Okay. The current incarnation of WiMAX is the 802.16e 2005 standard, and this has sort of all of the features we'll be covering today. It has the OFDM and indeed OFDMA. It supports handover and has sort of various other features which, again, are designed to improve the quality of the transmission. So you have good error correction schemes, antenna diversity is used, again, to improve the signal, MIMO schemes as well. Okay, and again, there's a number of techniques that are used primarily to, again, try and sort of get the best performance out possible. And again, the coding and the fast Fourier transforms are designed to sort of improve performance and improve resistance to sort of channel problems. And finally, something we'll spend a little time talking about, again, WiMAX supports quality of service. It supports it quite efficiently. Unlike 802.11, WiMAX has sort of centralized control of the resources through the base station, so that makes it relatively easy to again, support quality of service if you can decide how many resources and at what time any given connection is going to receive. Okay. So the standards, they're sort of a general framework, but there's a lot of things that aren't pinned down sort of completely within the standards, but are left as options. And these include options as to the physical layer and what form of transmission and multiplexing you're using. And again, options at of the MAC layer as well. Duplexing, so you can use either time division or frequency division depending what frequency band you're using, etc. So there's no guarantee, you can build a system to a WiMAX standard and there will be no guarantee that it'll interoperate with another standard. So within, and okay, so then this is sort of, I'm not going to sort of dwell on this. This sort of gives you what your various options are. Again, it's, you can read it if you actually go to Nuts and Bolts of WiMAX. But within the standards, so it's sort of like Bluetooth, subsets of those standards are defined. And if you conform to a profile which is, again, a subset of that standard, which pins down some of these options, then interoperability will occur. Okay. The body that is responsible for ensuring this interoperability and certifying compliance is the WiMAX Forum. And as you can see, it's not been on the go too long. The first certified products were certified in January of 2006, so 4 years ago. So the profiles are broken up into two portions. The system level profile sort of defines the features that you're going to use, so it pins down the method you're going to use, for instance, what PHY you're going to use, what transmission methodology you're going to use. And then the certification profile sort of deals with additional parameters, so things like operating frequency, channel bandwidth, duplexing modes. Okay. And so there are 5 fixed and 14 mobile certification profiles, and within those, only some have been developed into actual equipment. Okay, so what do we have? Again, 802.16 at its core provides this point-to-point connectivity, and then they're still working on exactly what sort of networking options would be desirable. Okay. And so the 802.16e, again, will primarily define a PHY and a MAC layer. On top of that, again, you want functionality. So the central mobility agent, etc., is to provide sort of cellular-like functionality. And then you also want just sort of internet connectivity, and that can be done separately. Okay. The MAC layer is further subdivided into a convergence sublayer, a common parts sublayer, and a security sublayer. And again, security is sort of self-explanatory. The MAC common parts sublayer would be providing sort of those things you would expect out of a data link layer. ARQ, resource allocation, etc. And then the convergence sublayer is sort of a formatting issue. So if you're passing it on to higher layers, just framing it up and making sure that the data is in the correct format, and vice versa, receiving it down from those layers. Okay, and again, it provides interfaces to various network options like ATM, IP, Ethernet, etc. Okay. So the technical challenges are, to some extent, what we've seen all along. They're the same ones that are in pretty much any wireless system. So you need reliable transmission. You want to get the best possible usage of your bandwidth. Again, this is a very limited resource for wireless systems. And for that reason, quality of service and quality of service support also becomes more complex than it might be in a wired system. Again, a lot of problems go away if you just have enough resources, but in wireless systems, you don't necessarily. There's also the reliability issue for wireless systems. There are more errors in wireless systems than wired. Okay. You want low power consumption for your handheld devices. You want robust security. You want it to interface with your existing networks. And again, ideally you want to support now mobility. The features of WiMAX, and we'll sort of a bit of a laundry list, but we'll go through them, and then we'll look at sort of the various technical details in a minute. It uses orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, and this is non-line of sight, and it has good resistance to multipath effects, and it also makes efficient use of your bandwidth. Okay. Because of this, you can get high peak data rates, and you can get up to 25 megabits per second. Okay. To support that, you not only have your OFDM, but you have various other techniques, error correction coding, MIMO, antennas, etc. Okay. WiMAX supports a scalable data rate and bandwidth, and this is done to sort of adapt to channel conditions. So if you think of a base station being something that's fixed, sort of the farther away you are from the base station, roughly, sort of the worse quality your channel. And so you can scale the data rates to sort of compensate for worsening channel conditions. And again, the adaptive modulation encoding is part and parcel of that. Okay. Okay, so WiMAX has sort of fairly good error correction. It combines forward error correction and your classic just resending the data. It supports both time division duplexing and frequency division duplexing, so your uplink and downlink channels can be distinguished by time slots or by frequency slots or by different frequencies. It supports multiple access, multiple users within the OFDM modulation. And again, it uses sort of advanced antenna techniques to try and improve your signal. Okay. It supports quality of service. And again, trying to mesh modern sort of resource-intensive applications with wireless channels requires a sort of some support of quality of service. And WiMAX is in a good position to do this because it does have centralized allocation of resources. It has good security protocols, and currently it does have support for mobility. And finally, it is IP-based. Okay. So that's sort of a very high level. Those are the good features of WiMAX. What we're going to look at now is just a few of those issues and sort of see why they work and why they're good. Okay, so the first thing we'll look at is orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. And so this provides, again, a way of modulating a signal, which is somewhat different from what we've seen before. And initially, this was thought of as essentially a spread spectrum technique. Okay. What you did was you took an incoming signal of at a certain bit rate, say R, and you divided that up into N outgoing signals of bit rate, then R over N. So when you reduce your bit rate, you're spreading your signal. Okay. And so this was allowed for reduced intersymbol interference, and was a good way to send signals. Now, we'll have a look at sort of exactly how we accomplish this. But at a high level, we can think of each of these sort of reduced rate bit streams as being transmitted along a separate orthogonal channel. Okay, we'll see why they're orthogonal in a minute. But just to give you a sneak preview, if you've got separate orthogonal channels, there's also no real requirement that you send a single bit stream along that. You can send different data streams along each of these separate channels. Okay, so not only can this be used as an efficient way or a good way of sending a single bit stream, but it can be used as a multiple access technique then as well to send different data streams. Okay, so the question now is, what is the channel for OFDM, and why is it so good? And what OFDM does, essentially, is it picks its carrier frequencies so that the signals transmitted are orthogonal to each other. And what this means is then that you can always extract out any individual signal without interference from any other signal. And so what you see here is that when any of these signals are at their peak, all of the other signals being transmitted are at zero. Okay. So what this means is that you don't have to define sort of bands around your signals and sort of just assume your transmission is centered in that band, but you can have a number of signals sort of overlapping each other, again, as long as the overlapping is chosen carefully. Okay. And so, again, what this means is that you can pack more carriers into you can pack the same number of carriers into a smaller space, or more carriers into the same space as you would have to use if, again, you had these sort of separate individual bands. Okay. So, having a little bit closer look at this, what's going on? And essentially, we're transmitting pulses, and the pulse will have a certain duration given by 2T. And in the Fourier domain, so in the frequency domain, that corresponds to a sync function. Okay. And that function has the characteristics we'd like. You know, it sort of has a relatively compact peak, and then it dies away fairly quickly. And again, what's important for us is it's going to intersect, it's going to hit zero at sort of the very specific points. Okay. And so now we can again move between sort of time shifting and frequency shifting. We've got this pulse modulated by a single tone, and now for any FC, our frequency response is shifted by 2 pi FC, and if we choose FC to be 1 over T, then we get our shift to be 2 pi over T. And again, what that's going to do is it's going to shift these points so that the zeros are always going to coincide. Yeah, where's my, okay, there's my picture. Okay. So we can, you know, if we pick our carrier frequencies as a function of our pulse duration, then we get this orthogonal property. And so, if you are enthusiastic, you can then think about what this means in terms of Fourier signals. And we have our combined signal is a, you know, is a series of these shifted sync functions. And you can do out that again, you can recover any individual signal exactly. Okay. Now, what's particularly nice about this is that it can be implemented in hardware using inverse fast Fourier transforms. You have a finite number of signals, and again, this works out well. I'm not going to go into the maths of this. You don't need to know it. Just again, realize that this is something that can be implemented fairly easily in hardware. Okay. Now, it's not quite that simple. If you think about delay, multipath delay, you can get sort of several signals coming in at slightly delayed from each other, and so a delayed signal could interfere with another signal. Okay, so if you think of them all just sort of all traveling and arriving at the same time, there's no interference. Delay can cause some small interference. Again, your shift is not exact then. Okay. And so to avoid this, a guard period is added. And again, there's the fairly complex way of adding in the guard period, and that deals quite efficiently with inter-symbol interference. And so this is just an example I pulled out of one of the papers, but if you have a system such as this, where you have 1,000 carrier frequencies and a data stream at 1 megabit per second, and we convert that into 1,000 data streams at 1 kilobit per second, which gives us a bit duration of 1 millisecond, and we add a guard time, which is 1/8 of a symbol direction, then in order to get interference, you'd have to have multipath spread, so a difference in paths of over 37 kilometers. So it is quite efficient in dealing with that problem. Okay. So in WiMAX, the standard allows certain parameters to be defined, which would include the fast Fourier transform size, and that essentially gives you how many channels you have, a number of subcarriers, so yeah, how you allocate those, the guard time, etc. Okay. In sort of the fixed WiMAX standard, your fast Fourier transform was of size 256, which gave 192 data subcarriers plus some sort of additional control type information. Okay. Okay. So having the fixed Fourier transform size means that depending on how much channel bandwidth you have, your delay will vary. So the higher your bandwidth, the sort of less time there is for each symbol, and the larger portion of that has to be spent as guard time. Okay, and so in mobile WiMAX, so the 802.16e, you can choose the size of your fast Fourier transform, and the symbol duration is fixed. So in this case, depending on the size of the fast Fourier transform, you get different bandwidths. Okay. Okay. So, as I said, OFDM can be used not just to send a single data stream, but to provide sort of separate channels for individual data streams. And the process of doing this is called OFDMA, orthogonal frequency division multiple access. Okay. Now, as implemented in WiMAX, access is allocated both on carrier frequencies, and also time is split up into slots, so you have time division multiplexing as well. Okay. So this is a graphical indication of that. You can, again, split up your channels according to frequencies, but then, again, each frequency can then be divided into time slots, and the users can be allocated according to time slots and frequencies. Okay. Now, what WiMAX is going to do is, again, a sort of fairly complex mapping of users onto carrier frequencies and time slots. So you don't necessarily give a user one frequency, one time slot. You'll give them blocks of typically of time slots and frequencies. Okay, and again, the decision as to who gets what is going to be it's going to be decided by the base station, and on the basis of who has data to send and what quality of service agreements there are for sending that data. Okay. And so, again, the users, so the subchannel and then time slot is referred to as just a slot, and then the users are allocated a number of slots, potentially. And so they can be allocated a contiguous number of slots. And this is good for fixed and low mobility applications. So you just, everything's sent. And if you're not worried about sort of, again, channel effects, then you're okay. Potentially, the subcarriers can be distributed for the purpose of frequency diversity. So again, if you're experiencing channel effects, we said it's better to be doing frequency hopping, and essentially what this is frequency hopping. And again, the allocation can be made according to quality of service requirements and the channel conditions. So you can match your mapping to the situation. Okay. Typically, time division duplexing is used, which means you have a downlink and an uplink on separate time slots. And again, how much of the bandwidth is allocated to downlink and uplink depends on the traffic requirements. So you get a scenario like this, where again, you have your time direction, and you have a downlink frame, you have a guard period, so and then an uplink frame, and then the user data is allocated to bursts, so it's allocated to a sort of contiguous slots and frequency carrier frequencies, again, they vary according to the user's requirements. Okay. They're just like for other wireless systems, some of the slots are reserved for control information as well. So for OFDM, for WiMAX, again, the base station is allocating these resources, and that has to be communicated through uplink mapping, an uplink map and a downlink map. And so that's control information. And ranging allows the base station to assess channel conditions and sort of determine, again, what sort of modulation schemes and allocations it's going to make. Okay. And as I noted, WiMAX has adaptive modulation encoding, where according to channel condition and the base station determines the a modulation encoding scheme, which will maximize the throughput given a specific signal-to-noise ratio. So if you have a target signal-to-noise ratio, then you send as much data as possible for that target, but don't, but no more. Okay. The decision is made on a burst-by-burst basis, so it's made for each individual user in turn. And there's a total of 52 modulation encoding schemes that can be chosen from, and these are referred to as burst profiles. Okay. And so, again, what we would expect is as we get farther from the base station, our channel is deteriorating, and so our what we want is to reduce our symbol rate, essentially, to sort of try and combat that. So we have the highest symbol rate. We have 64 qm in close, then we get 16 qm, and finally we can go to just plain old QPSK. Okay. So, that sort of covers basic transmission of bits. Obviously, they're not all going to get there correctly. Not all of your data, then your frames will get there correctly. And so WiMAX relies on a hybrid ARQ scheme to deal with data errors. And again, we list this under the PHY layer because there's forward error correction going on. Okay, and that will be implemented in hardware. Okay, so type 1 hybrid ARQ, again, it combines forward error correction and retransmission of lost data. Error detection and correction is accomplished by a CRC. And if a block has to be retransmitted, the two blocks worth of data are combined in order to try and extract your information. Okay. And WiMAX implements hybrid ARQ by providing a number of forward error correction techniques plus then stop and wait ARQ. There's also type 2 hybrid ARQ, and in this case, retransmissions are coded somewhat differently than the initial transmissions, typically with more error correction information available. Okay, so that's sort of the a few points about the physical layer. Again, we haven't really touched upon anything to do with antennas and antenna techniques, but those are all in there as well. So the second layer defined by WiMAX is the MAC layer. And again, the part that we're really mainly going to concern ourselves with is the common part sublayer. And so this handles allocation of resources. So how do you sort of multiplex onto the channels provided. Okay. And so, again, we have also the convergence sublayer, which just provides interfaces to various network layers, and then the security sublayer, which will do encryption and authentication, as we've seen before. Okay. So how is channel access accomplished for WiMAX? And as we've already said, it's a connection-oriented solution with the base station making the decisions. Okay. So a user, or more specifically, a sort of a data stream connection for a user, is going to negotiate how many resources that they can expect from the system, and in both the uplink and downlink direction. Okay. And so the base station has a number of ways of doing this, and so an individual user with multiple connections may just receive a block grant from the base station, and then the user can determine how to use the resources within the grant themselves. And the base station also polls individual systems to see if there is a need for resources. And the poll can take the form of sort of individual mobile stations, so it can ask each one in turn, or it can go into a contention-based scheme where it allows users to contend for time slots. Okay. And so this combination of sort of pre-allocation of resources, polling, and contention is going to then support any notions of quality of service provision. Okay. And so 802.16 has a relatively strong notion of quality of service, certainly compared to 802.11. Potentially even compared to the sort of other cellular technologies, which again are more telephony oriented still. Okay. And so for each data stream, so service flow, so for each connection, the quality of service parameters can be negotiated. And these parameters are sort of what you would expect. Things like, well, what's the priority? What rate do you want? Do you want any guarantees on things like delay or jitter? How much bandwidth do you need? And potentially you can also negotiate things like ARQ, which would impact on error tolerance as well. Okay. So all of these things are negotiable sort of when the connection is set up. Okay. A connection has attached with it a number of these parameters, and again, values for the parameter that are sort of significant. Okay. And all of this is used to provide five different classes or categories of service. And so, this table summarizes that, but essentially, if you look at the types of service, you've got unsolicited grant service, so that's just sort of one-off requests, real-time polling, sort of things that recur regularly, non-real-time polling, sort of regular but variable length, best effort, some no real quality, very little quality of service requirements, and sort of an extended real time, again, regular but with variable requirements. Okay. And so for each of these, you have to attach a set of quality of service requirements, and then what's sort of not specified, but what we'll say is sort of, you know, there's sort of more obvious ways of doing it, is how then those requirements will be provided for. Okay. So our unsolicited grant service is fixed size data packets at a constant bit rate. And so this certain forms of voice over IP use this. Sometimes if there's compression involved, then it might not, but it's one of it, that's an example. So the idea here is, again, you have a constant bit rate and a constant you have a constant packet rate and fixed size packets, and that gives you a constant bit rate. Okay. And so what you want is, again, for something like voice, you don't want delay, and you certainly don't want variations in your delay. And you have a very specific bit rate that needs to go through. Okay. And so what the service that's going to be offered then is a fixed size grant on a periodic basis. So you'll get bandwidth, a fixed amount of bandwidth periodically. So, you know, you would think that that would correspond to the size of your packets or size of a number of packets being sent in. Okay. Real-time polling services. You have variable size packets generated periodically, so like an MPEG, a streaming video, the packet sizes are not fixed but variable. And so, again, you're not going to want huge delays. You are going to need at least a minimum rate. Potentially, again, that rate varies. Okay. And again, typically what happens is that the base station will provide polling. It'll ask the mobile station how much bandwidth they need in the next round. And that the polling has to occur often enough to make sure that your latency or your delay is not too great. Okay. Okay, so non-real-time polling services will support delay-tolerant data streams with some minimum guaranteed rate. Okay, so for instance, file transfer, you don't really care about sort of the way the packets come in, but you would eventually like to receive your file. And so you end up with a minimum rate, which means that, you know, according to you, you at least get the file according to that minimum rate. You can prioritize your transmissions. You can deal with retransmission sort of incorrectness, which is important. And you can have a maximum rate as well. Okay. And so in terms of the base station, this is going to be handled similarly to the real time, but the polling will occur less frequently. Okay. The mobile stations can also contend for resources. So if there's sort of free space, essentially, and the base station can sort of throw that open to requests on a contention-based reservation scheme. Okay, so best efforts, you have no guarantees on the minimum level of service. And so in this case, you can you'll sort of cap your maximum traffic rate, so you'll ensure that the user never gets more than that maximum. They can set a priority. They can decide whether they want retransmissions or not, and that's done on the contention-based scheme. Okay. So that becomes sort of your wireless LAN scenario where you're contending for the free resources. Okay. And finally, extended real-time variable rate services are sort of your most quality of service intensive. So you have a variable data rate real-time application now. So you need a guarantee on the rate, you need a guarantee on the delay, but the traffic coming in is coming in at a variable rate. Okay, so the example here is voice over IP with silence suppression. So the idea here is voice is, again, very delay sensitive. If you have a two-way conversation going, there's, you know, You can't say buffer. You can't have big delays, and the silence suppression means again that the packets being transmitted are a variable size. Okay, and so here you want some minimum rate. Certainly, the system will put a cap, put a maximum rate on, and again you need you have to cap the latency and the jitter as well. Okay. And so here there's a periodic grant given, but if that does not prove sufficient because of the variable sizes of the packets, the mobile station can also contend for additional resources. Okay. So, that covers sort of resource allocation, at least at some high level. Again, there's three ways the resources get allocated. They're either just there's a periodic grant, there's polling, and then there's just there's a contention-based scheme as well. And so a combination of these three methods can give you pretty good quality of service support. So there are various power-saving modes. And again, here, just your device, if it's not sort of actively engaged in data transmission, can go into either a sleep or an idle mode. And again, with the idea of supporting mobility, the device would want to wake up relatively frequently, or at some period anyway, to sort of check their connectivity. Okay. And so in sleep mode, the mobile station still is scanning for handoff information, so it'll automatically sort of switch base stations, although it won't be active in transmitting data. In idle mode, the mobile station will not sort of contact base stations as it hands off, but it will be included in paging groups, so the base stations will track where it is, okay, and if it needs to be paged, it can be paged. Okay, so in terms of mobility support, WiMAX sort of envisaged a number of levels simple mobility and full mobility are what are the sorts types of mobility you'd expect out of a cellular system. Nomadic just means that the user is just moving from one room to another, or from one house to another, or whatever, and will require sort of a manual reconnection. Portable attempts to accomplish the connections via handover, but sort of makes no guarantee. And then simple mobility provides handover, but potentially with some interruption in service, so the connections are not instantaneous. And then full mobility is sort of instantaneous, or relatively instantaneous handover. In all cases, we'll go to that in a second. It's still with full mobility possible that you will potentially lose some packets. Okay, so 802.16e defines three handoff or handover mechanisms. And so you have hard handover, which is an abrupt transfer from one base station to another. And in this case, it's possible that data is lost. So the first base, the initial base station, might have been in the process of, might have data queued or might be transmitting data. And there's no obligation that data be transferred once the handover is made. That data is just lost. Okay, and so that's required for 802.16e. The other two methods are optional, and these methods maintain simultaneous connections to multiple base stations. So again, that should cover the issue of losing data potentially. And in fast base station switching, the mobile station maintains a list of base stations called an active set, and it connects to each of the base stations within that active set. But in terms of data transfer is with a single base station only. It's sort of primary connection. In the second, macro diversity handover, the mobile station can communicate with, or can do data exchange with, a number of base stations known as a diversity set at the same time. Okay, just to wrap up, that's sort of that what we've gone through there is sort of the core of the 802.16 specification. Again, to be seen as a networking solution, you have to say something about the higher layers as well, and they're still working on that. Okay, and so basically you have the 802.16 air interface, and then a proposition for having a unified architecture to support fixed and mobile deployments, and they've taken the design decision to support IP traffic only. Okay. And what you'll see is that what you have here is essentially the same functionality you have for the cellular systems. You have the base stations handling connectivity. You have an access service network gateway to connect you to sort of the wired world or the rest of the world. And you have connectivity service network, okay, which again is going to handle sort of higher layer connectivity. Okay, so very similar to what you had for the cellular networks, which again we're giving you a full network architecture. Okay, and so that's sort of a picture of how it should look. And again, your base stations are connected to this access network, and then the access network then accesses the rest of the world or an IP network through a gateway. Not going to go through this and read it out. Just as usual, you have to define interfaces between each of the different components. Okay, so that's it for WiMAX. What I propose is that we take a relatively short break, and say 10 minutes, and then when we come back, I will say, you know, again, just a very few words about the exam. I've posted a sample exam, and again, I have a few slides. It's somewhat difficult to say anything sort of too specific, but well, you know, hopefully what I have said you'll find somewhat helpful. So we'll come back in 10 minutes and wrap up. Okay, we'll get started again. I won't take too long for this time. Is that right? Final portion. Just to note that there is a sample exam posted, and so the it certainly gives you an idea of the general format. The exam is 3 hours. It consists of 5 questions, of which you have to answer 4. Okay, and if you take a look at the types of questions, they typically are a mixture of sort of general knowledge and something either derivational or calculational. Okay, and so there's not a lot to be said about that. For anything that's sort of calculational, you should look at the 2 problem sets as giving you maybe a good indication of what that could be. The derivations obviously would come from the notes, and any sort of general knowledge stuff comes from the notes. the questions are divided a bit thematically. If you think about sort of the different lectures as being themes, they tend to sort of rely on one or two themes per question. It would not be a good idea to sort of say that the themes were going to be exactly the same for the actual exams as for the sample. I did, later on, I did act in the review sort of break down where the questions were drawn in the actual exams. I don't think this is, but I mean, that in and of itself isn't going to give you a lot of clue. They're essentially spread over the entire course coverage. Okay, so now going on to the review. That's not what I wanted to do. Where's slideshow? Okay. So, what's available in the course? Well, you have the lecture notes. They are all posted, and hopefully in a very short while, I will post this final Camtasia version of the lectures, and that will complete the Camtasia offering as well. Okay. At the beginning of each PowerPoint file, PowerPoint set of notes, there's the references are listed. Okay. And the main one, or the sort of majority one, is the William Stallings book, and then that's supplemented by primarily online resources. Okay, there were two problem sets. One deals with sort of the physical layer, and then one deals with cellular systems. And the solutions are provided for those, and any sort of, again, calculational questions would probably be along the lines of what was asked there. Not exactly the same, but if you're comfortable with what's there, probably there would be no problem on the exam either. Okay. As I showed there, there's a sample exam available, which is indicative of format and sort of the general style of the questions. You have to choose four of the five. The questions tend to be a mix of calculation or derivation and then just general knowledge or understanding. Don't overanalyze the samples. It's just, you know, something I threw together. And, it probably has some overlap with the exams, but certainly not 100% or anywhere near that. Okay, so I did list the topics for the questions. I'm not sure whether that's helpful or not. But you know, again, to be what it indicates is that the questions are pretty much spread over all of the course material. Okay, so actually, this is a repeat of what I said before. Okay, and I was a bit hesitant to sort of go into details on the topics, but I decided to sort of at least list some general things. And, you know, it tends to cover everything anyway. Sort of for the digital comms model, you know, what I would see as important is sort of knowing sort of the model and understanding the functionality of the blocks. And then within that, we looked at sort of various source coding techniques. And again, you probably need to at least understand the functionality of them. Channel coding and digital modulation. And then sort of spread spectrum is sort of almost, it's a topic unto itself. It's probably one of the few things that I would sort of regard as a specific topic, even though it was sort of lumped together with these notes. And finally, you have performance. And there were some formulae associated with that. I probably expect you to know some of the basic ones. So the relationship to sort of signal to noise and then bit energy to noise. Shannon capacity. Everybody ought to know Shannon capacity, at least the state. And then there was a bit of work sort of, and you can see where in the problem sets in relating signal to noise and sort of various performance parameters, bit error rates and bandwidth efficiency specifically. For those, I would probably provide any formulas that were needed, or in some cases there were tables or graphs, and I would provide those. Okay, so RF systems. Well, again, I would expect you to know free space loss. And then, something about the factors that affect that loss, sort of additional to free space loss. So we spent a bit of time on multipath, and again, you should probably be able to sort of know where that came from and be able to reproduce it. And then there were other factors such as mobility and fading and the channel conditions, bandwidth, etc. Okay, and you should know what those factors are and what sort of impacts they have. Okay, we then discussed various other loss models, the Lee, Hata, and Akamura models, and I would not expect you to know the formulas. They're complex enough, and essentially since they're relying on empirical data, they've got weird constants and maybe graphs and whatever. But you should understand where they come from and how they relate to each other. And then this finally diversity, techniques to sort of overcome some of the problems we have with loss factors, know what they are and how they're used. Okay, so cellular systems, that's essentially just that's the outline of the notes, and it's all good. There are a number of formulas having to do with the relationship between reuse distance, reuse factors, co-channel interference reduction, signal interference. So you should have a good handle on that. You should be able to derive them. You should know what they are. There aren't a whole pile, but there are enough, and they're sort of fairly core. You don't need to do that for CDMA. Okay. Again, the it's much more complex to calculate those things for CDMA. I showed it to you, but I don't expect you to be able to reproduce it. But again, you should be aware of how CDMA systems operate and how they're sort of qualitatively different from orthogonal systems, if not quantitatively different. Okay. Then power control is, again, just knowledge, what sort of techniques there are. Traffic engineering, so you should be able to use the Erlang formula to assess various qualities of your capacity planning. Okay. And then we listed a bunch of techniques for increasing capacity, and again, that's knowledge. You should know them. Okay. Now, cellular networks are sort of just endless details. I wouldn't expect you to know timelines and sort of various versionings of things, but and I think one of the questions I asked is about the evolution, just what changes from sort of generically from one system to the next. And then we did go into a fair few details about the GSM setup, and you know, again, do your best to take those on board. And more cellular systems, more details. Again, just to sort of try and get at least the basic concepts, what's changing, what's staying the same, and sort of how sort of overall things are handled as well as you can. And then finally, last week we dealt with the wireless LANs, and so there's sort of generic setup details, sort of how are things generically arranged. And then probably the most interesting part would then be the MAC access and sort of how is resource allocation accomplished, how is access accomplished, and what sort of quality of service support is there. And then, you know, we had similar issues for Bluetooth. How is it sort of generically set up? And then what do all the layers, what sort of basic functionality do they provide? And finally, today we did WiMAX. Again, I wouldn't expect you to know the difference between 802.16e and D necessarily, but be aware that there are flavors and versions, and again, understand the idea of certification for WiMAX. Understand the basic principles of the PHY. You don't need to know the details of the fast Fourier transform, but you know, basically know how OFDM works and how that's extended to OFDMA. And then further, how does sort of WiMAX fit that into its resource allocation? Be aware of the other features of the PHY layer, so adaptive modulation encoding, hybrid ARQ, security, et cetera. I guess security is MAC. And then, again, the MAC and one big thing, there's the idea of just generically how resources are allocated, and the idea that you have a connection-oriented system, then what quality of support mechanisms there are, mobility support, and I guess finally it's not on here, but again, how does that fit into a sort of more generic network scheme? And all I did was say three words about it, but you know, be aware of that. So that's pretty much it. I'm around. I guess you have a couple of weeks to study now, and I'll be around if you have any questions. As always, the best thing to do is send me email, and we can either deal with the questions that way or, again, set up an appointment, and I'll be happy to talk to you. So, any questions or anything arising?
I didn't say your networks, these highly abbreviated terms. Is it just the higher level stuff, or do you really need to know the lower level abbreviated terms?
It depends which ones. Give me an example.
The likes of the basic architecture, all right, and all the abbreviated terms associated with that.
Probably anything lower than that is too much detail. Yeah, but you should know certainly the basic architecture and the components within that. So you should know all the components do more or less. And yeah, it is the alphabet soup. as an example, I don't expect you to know all the logical channel acronyms, for instance. I mean, you know, you should know sort of the basic flavors of logical channels, but I'm not going to ask you what a FOC does, for instance, because, yeah, that's a lot of detail. Okay, anything else? Okay, well, good luck with that then. And so I will either be hearing from you or see you in a few weeks' time.